Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We will start today with new developments in the Russia investigation. As seen by former prosecutor and former congressional Watergate investigator Elizabeth Holtzman. Some of the latest details, NBC News reports the FBI warned both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the summer of last year during the campaign that Russia might try to infiltrate their campaigns, and that if they saw or their aides saw any signs of this, they should report it to the FBI. The NBC story says there is no indication that any Trump campaign official did, despite the meetings that we now know about, including the one last June with Russians claiming to have dirt on Clinton and asking for sanctions relief for Russia. Also, maybe tangential, the Washington Post reports today that Trump considered withdrawing his Supreme Court nomination of Neil Gorsuch because Gorsuch, during the confirmation process, said he was upset at Trump's constant attacks on the independent judiciary. Various reports continue to come out as well. Trump seems convinced of his pending exoneration by Robert Mueller soon, a finding of no collusion, and that Trump anticipates a public letter from Mueller before too long saying so, while at the same time, reports keep popping up about Trump considering trying to fire Mueller. He was asked about this by a reporter on Sunday. Now listen closely because the follow-up question is hard to hear in this, but the follow-up question is, are you considering firing Robert Mueller?
As we said, there's no collusion. There's no collusion whatsoever, but a lot of lawyers thought that was pretty sad.
Do you still be intending to fire Mueller?
No, I'm not. No.
No, I'm not considering firing Mueller. No, was that answer. But the drumbeat of Fox News hosts and others trying to discredit the Mueller investigation also continues. Those focus, for example, on one top investigator, Andrew Weissman, who's been reported to have been at Hillary Clinton's election night event, three who have been found to have donated money to Democrats, and a text message exchange between now demoted Mueller staffer Peter Strzok and an FBI lawyer, Lisa Page, last year, that referred to some kind of insurance policy against Trump being elected. What was that? Lots to talk about with Elizabeth Holtzman, who's been, among other things, a member of Congress on the Watergate Committee and the Brooklyn DA. Thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much, Brian. I'm very glad to be here.
And we also hear that Trump team people and Mueller team people will meet later this week, and that could be big, and we'll get to that. But Nixon did fire the special prosecutor investigating him. How similar is this moment with Trump to that?
Well, we've already had one firing by Trump. Let's get that
James
clear.
James Comey, the FBI
Yeah, he
director.
Fired the head of the FBI after asking, according to Comey's testimony, after he asked Comey to basically lay off any further investigation of Flynn, his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, and asking from Comey a pledge of loyalty. Let's go back to Watergate. In Watergate, the president, Nixon, knew that there were incriminating White House tapes. Nixon, for reasons we still don't 100% understand, taped everything that happened in the Oval Office. And John Dean, one of his top aides, had testified before Congress that he told President Nixon about the Watergate cover-up, that the burglars were being paid money not to tell about higher-ups, the involvement of higher-ups. What Nixon said, according to John Dean, was, don't worry about it, I know where we can get the money, in essence. Dean testified that this is what happened. President Nixon said it never happened. And then we discover that there are White House tapes that can show who is telling the truth. The special prosecutor sought these tapes. The special prosecutor investigating the Watergate break-in and the cover-up sought these tapes to find out, was Dean lying or was the president lying? And if so, what were the consequences? Well, Nixon knew he was in real trouble, and so he fired the special prosecutor. We're not at that exact moment, but we're in a similar moment where we have the first head of the FBI removed, presumably or apparently, because he was getting very close to the investigation of top-level Trump campaign aides and ultimately presidential aides. He was removed. He was replaced by Robert Mueller. Mueller is a highly respected, highly regarded former head of the FBI under both a Republican and Democratic administration. He's now in charge, and the rumors are flying that Mueller is conflicted, that he should be removed, maybe he should be taken out in handcuffs, whatever. And so the attacks on him now are relentless. We're getting to the point where many people fear that Mueller is going to be removed from office because he's getting close to the goods on this president or his administration.
And I want to get in a minute to some of the particular charges that are being leveled against, if not Mueller, members of his team, tainting the investigation, allegedly. But you heard the clip in which the president said he is not considering firing Mueller. Other Trump aides also said that on the Sunday talk shows this week. And yet I hear warnings in some media that Trump might even do it over the holidays while Congress is away. What do you think is real and what do you think is hyperbole on either side?
We never know with Donald Trump. One day he says one thing and the next day he totally changes his mind. He's been known to lie broadly and incredibly about everything from the size of the crowds at his campaign to the fact that millions of illegal aliens were the ones who gave Hillary Clinton advantage in the popular vote. Do we know that, number one, Donald Trump understands reality? And number two, do we know that Donald Trump will tell the truth and stay with that truth? I think those are very questionable issues. I can't predict. He could very well fire Mueller. But then, of course, whether the Congress is in session or not in session is irrelevant. There will be a public firestorm of enormous repercussions. In Watergate, in the end, what happened when Nixon fired the special prosecutor, Archibald Cox, the country was up in arms because they said, you know, we're not a banana republic. The president or anybody under investigation can't pick who's investigating him or her. Can't happen in America. We're still a country of under the rule of law. And so the American people then demanded congressional action, and that started the impeachment inquiry, and that was the beginning of the end of Richard Nixon.
But with today's polarization, would you accept a similar uprising by Republicans if Trump tried to do the same thing?
It doesn't have to be everybody. Remember, Abraham Lincoln said you can't fool all the people all the time, but you can fool some of the people some of the time. So there are still going to be Trump partisans no matter what. But I certainly hope that if the president of the United States fires a special prosecutor because he's getting close to the evidence against him or his top aides, that the country would rise up as one. Now, there will be some people who will say, oh, you know, this is a hoax and whatever. But I think most Americans understand that this is a serious effort, that this is a serious prosecutor, and that we have to have a rule of law. Because if the president can pick his prosecutor, well, then why shouldn't I be able to pick my prosecutor or you or anybody in the public? Oh, I stole something? I don't like that guy or gal. They're too honest. I want to find someone who's my buddy to prosecute me. That's not America. But if we're going to go down that road, the American people have to stop it.
My guest is former prosecutor, Brooklyn DA Elizabeth Holtzman, former member of Congress, active during the Watergate era in investigating that as a member of Congress. And we can take your phone calls for her on the Russia investigation as she interprets what's going on right now. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let's stay on that track. As a prosecutor, what do you think about the questions being raised now about members of Mueller's team? Like, the focus seems to be on people who he has hired who may have expressed anti-Trump or pro-Clinton sentiments in the past or did things like attend Clinton's election night event.
Well, I think the texting was unfortunate by the FBI agent and by the FBI lawyer because there's nothing that's not private. And it gives a very bad appearance. Remember, though, if you read many of those texts by the FBI employees, you'll see that they weren't just anti-Trump. They were anti-Bernie Sanders. They were anti the Clintons. They were anti a lot of people. So in context, it's not clear that they weren't just general political haters as opposed to just Trump haters. So let's get that straight. So I think that was unfortunate, and I think everybody in the staff should be his staff should be ultra careful about anything in public. So there's a second point here, which is the idea that because a prosecutor may have some political views or some other personal views, that will stand in the way of making a professional decision. It's like saying, a doctor is not going to do what's right for a patient because the doctor thinks the patient's political views are anathema. That's not going to happen. Professionals know how to deal in a situation in a professional manner, and you put your personal feelings behind you. And in any case, we have a system of justice in America where it's not just what the FBI official thinks, and it's not just what the prosecutor thinks. We have a court of law, we have jurors, we have appellate courts, we have the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's going to be very hard to railroad a president of the United States or his top staff. And that's really nonsense. So I think all of these attacks are just an obfuscation, a red herring, an effort to just muddy the waters to delegitimize this investigation and make it tough in the event that there is an indictment or a suggestion that the president himself or his son-in-law or somebody really close to him has been engaged in criminal activity, because then they're going to scream this was a biased investigation, an improper investigation, and so forth. But I think the American people have to understand these are people who are that Mueller picked on his staff are, from what I understand, and some of the people worked with people who used to work for me when I was Brooklyn DA, that these are among the most experienced and professional people. And one of the things as a prosecutor you know is if you don't have the evidence, you can't prosecute. That's kind of basic. And that's what's going to happen. If there are no goods on Donald Trump or anybody else, maybe the prosecutor would want to, maybe the FBI agent would want to, but it's not going to happen. If it does happen, then there are courts to stop it.
What about the case of Andrew Weissman in particular, who is apparently so good at investigating financial crimes, but he, if the reports are true, attended Hillary Clinton's election night event? Is that reason enough to remove him from Mueller's team?
No.
Why?
Because the expertise is really important, and because his techniques of investigation and his experience is invaluable. And if he proceeds without evidence, Mueller's going to be looking over his shoulder, as are other people. So he's not going to be able to say, oh, we have this airtight case against Donald Trump if there's no evidence. It's not going to happen. I mean, people think somehow that prosecutors could just wave their wands and somebody goes to jail. That doesn't happen. It happens sometimes in America for poor people or people who are not well known or don't have the means to hire the best lawyers. But it's not going to happen to anyone in Donald Trump's team or anyone who's associated with him. So that's just nonsense. It's just impossible to happen. And I remember many times when we wanted to make prosecutions. I mean, we knew that, for example, there were organized crime murders in Brooklyn. Let's take it out of the political context. Let's just do murders, organized crime murders in Brooklyn. We were desperately looking for the evidence. But if you didn't have it, you couldn't bring those cases. That was it, period.
And with Elizabeth Holtzman, Irene in Warren, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Irene.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question to you is, I'm concerned about the discussion of Watergate and the speculation that Trump is going to fire Mueller when we're not there yet. So we're jumping the gun and it's making everybody very nervous. But he's made it clear, as has other people in his administration, that he wants to. He won't fire Mueller. So why are we already going down that road and talking Watergate and all of that? That's what makes me a little
right. And that's a great question. I think the moment that we're at is Trump and his surrogates from the administration saying on Sunday on television that they have no plans to fire Mueller at the same time as many commentators who are friendly to Trump going on Fox News and saying Mueller deserves to be fired. So there's this sort of two-track thing taking place in the media. That's not to say the White House is coordinating the whole thing, but it's being taken very seriously by quite a few Trump supporters that the Mueller investigation is tainted and that he deserves to be fired, and that even if he doesn't deserve to be fired individually, that the investigation is tainted. So I think, honestly, that is the moment that we're at right now, where we need to pick apart and understand those various things, Irene.
Yes, this is Liz Holtzman responding. I think it's an important question, and God knows that probably most Americans are with you in the sense they don't want a second Watergate to happen. Nobody wants that. In fact, when it came to the vote on the impeachment of Richard Nixon, actually sitting there and voting, nobody wanted to have to vote for it because nobody wanted to see a president doing these things or being in a position for impeachment. So I don't want to see that happen. On the other hand, I think there are unfortunately unmistakable similarities. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. But we can't close our eyes to the fact that we have this barrage of attacks on Mueller. Remember, Mueller, last time anybody knew, was registered as a Republican.
George W. Bush appointed him.
Barack Obama reappointed him. Why did they do that? Because he was a straight arrow. When he was first appointed, Newt Gingrich even said, an excellent choice. You couldn't have a better choice. It was a chorus of Republican support.
When he was named special counsel,
Mueller. Now what we have is we just had a hearing last week where the Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee were attacking the FBI, the head of the FBI, and saying that the FBI was, you know, and Trump himself has said that the FBI is in tatters, it's in terrible shape, the worst ever, even though he's picked the new head of the FBI.
And we didn't pull this clip, but Jeff Sessions, Trump's attorney general, testified before Congress that no, the FBI is not in tatters, and the FBI reports to him.
So here we have the president himself personally attacking the integrity of the FBI. I'll just read you a quote from Kellyanne Conway, one of his top media aides, who said, and this is a quote, quote, the fix was in against Donald Trump from the beginning. Well, that's an indictment.
When was that? How long ago?
This was in a New York Times article yesterday.
Just yesterday.
I don't know when the quote was. It doesn't say, but I believe that the quote, because this is all about this issue, I believe the quote
I think I know what that is, because she was on television somewhere within the last few days, even referring or being asked about and not dismissing the idea of a coup against Donald Trump being in place during the campaign by FBI agents who were trying to prevent his election.
Yeah, so we're seeing, all I'm saying is that these are not, made up items. These are words that are coming out both from Donald Trump, from Trump's top aides, and from the extreme right-wing Republicans in Congress. And so the country needs to be alert to this. You can't just say, oh, well, we don't want Watergate to happen. Of course, nobody wants Watergate to happen again. But we cannot be put our heads in the sand about this and ignore it. I think it's a very sad thing, because you shouldn't be saying the fix is in, because that undermines the whole criminal justice system of the United States. Where does the president and his top aide, where did they come off attacking the credibility and legitimacy of those institutions?
Irene, thank you very much for your call. Please call us again. And a kind of follow-up question from Stephen in Rockland. Stephen, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Good morning. Okay, so my question for Ms. Holtzman is, how much of an effect do you, if Fox News had been in place
during Watergate,
at the time of the Watergate investigation, how much do you think that would have hampered/hamstrung the ability of the investigators then?
That's a good alternative history question.
part of the answer to that is that there was such substantial evidence against Richard Nixon of various kinds. We weren't really relying a lot on people's testimony. In essence, Nixon's top aide, Haldeman, took copious notes, and you also had the Watergate tapes. Of course, we didn't have the distraction of attacks from the daily press. At least I don't recall them. Maybe they were. I do recall at the end of our deliberations when we were actually spending a lot of time hashing over the evidence as a committee. There were 38 members, so you can imagine what that means to hash over with 38 people. We were really seriously working, and the press was attacking us for deliberately delaying things and, you know, doing it politically. So I do remember that, but that had no impact on the chair's decision to go forward in a very fair and deliberate manner, but we were being attacked. I think the point here is that, yes, there will be attacks. Yes, there will be people who will disagree. But in the end, what happened to Richard Nixon and why the rule of law was asserted against him and why he was held accountable was because that's what the American people wanted. And yes, disinformation, misinformation, the attacks by his aides. I mean, a lot of that stuff was going on, maybe not to the same extent as now, but people have to see through it. If not, then I think our democracy is in danger, because that's what's at stake here. The president can fire the prosecutor. Then we do not have the rule of law. Then we are just like any banana republic, any two-bit dictatorship. Then we've thrown out the hundreds of years of constitutional history and our democratic system.
Another issue right now is Mueller obtaining emails from Trump transition officials. The Trump supporters are trying to portray that as not okay because some were private emails. Mueller's office has said they were all obtained voluntarily or through law enforcement procedures. How would that work in real life if he was approaching transition officials for emails?
Well, my understanding is that I'm assuming that he got these materials from the General Services Administration, which signed an agreement with the Trump transition team that these materials were going to be held by the General Services Administration. I haven't seen that agreement, so I'm not sure what it says. But it doesn't really matter what it says, because there are federal rules in place that protect somebody in the situation of the transition committee. Let's assume there were attorney-client privilege materials. There's a federal rule of evidence that says even if you inadvertently turn over attorney-client privilege materials, their use can be stopped if you go to the court and you say this was inadvertently turned over, and you do this promptly when you find out about the problem. But instead of going to the court under the federal rules that exist to deal with this problem, the lawyer for the transition committee writes a letter to the Congress, and he doesn't even ask the Congress to do something about the problem now. He wants the Congress to pass legislation so this won't happen in the future. This was just a political ploy. It's an obvious ploy. He didn't say, help me now, this is terrible. He said, prevent this from happening in the future. Well, why is he raising that issue? If he has got a problem now, you just go to the court and you try to get it resolved. It happens all the time. This is not something brand new. It's right there in the federal rules.
I saw Ari Melber, MSNBC's chief legal analyst, say on TV last night that claiming something is illegal, Mueller obtaining the emails, but going to the press, not to a judge, as these Trump surrogates are doing, suggests they don't actually have a case about anything being wrong with having the transition emails.
Listen, what would be the attorney-client privilege in the transition? It's hard to see. And also, remember, even if there is an attorney, a discussion with an attorney, if you're plotting how to commit a crime, then there's no attorney-client privilege. So it may not exist. So this may be just a total made-up claim. And of course, it's not Mueller's fault. Mueller issues a subpoena or he asks for documents. Either they're voluntarily turned over or they're turned over in response to a subpoena. Mueller's not responsible if people improperly turn over documents to him. He's done nothing wrong or illegal there. That's the other thing here. This is not any fault on the part of Mueller. This is either the fault of the transition committee in terms of not protecting themselves, or it's the fault of GSA. It's not the fault of Mueller. And there's a remedy. You can go to court. So they didn't do that.
Ari Melber also said on his show, The Beat, last night, by way of political context for all this, that we're in a new phase of the Mueller investigation, and Trump's lawyers are running scared because Mueller has Trump transition emails. That's why they're ramping up the effort to discredit the investigation right at this time, because the emails might reveal more people who lied to the FBI, because Mueller has a better record through the transition emails than they may have realized when they were questioned. Does that make sense to you?
Of course it makes sense to me. I mean, it makes sense that people in trouble will try to do whatever they can to divert attention from the bad things they've done. And this is, by the way, something in response to the first questioner about, you know, why we're drawing comparisons to Watergate and that Trump has said he's not going to fire Mueller. Trump could make it very clear that these kinds of attacks have no place in proper political discussion.
Of course, the Democrats did it during Ken Starr, right? During the Clinton impeachment process, Democrats were demonizing the special prosecutor there, Ken Starr, all over the place. Is this different?
I guess, par for the course. But I think this sense of difference here is that the not only do you have the committee that's in control of Congress, and you have the press, Fox News, harping on this, and you have presidential aides also harping on this. So, I mean, I hope that we're going to be able to resist it, and so far that's happened. But, yeah, the Democrats could do bad things, too. No political party has a monopoly on virtue, that we know.
And with former congressional Watergate investigator and former Brooklyn DA Elizabeth Holtzman, Bruce in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bruce.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. Hope everyone is well. I wanted to comment that it's a different reality now. While I'm very enamored with Ms. Holtzman and know that she means well all around, we live in a different environment now, and I would like to ask her the question that doesn't she think the environment is different now than from the 70s and the 60s, where we live in a different reality since 2001. We've had this war. No one has protested. Bush lied about the weapons of mass destruction. He didn't receive any ramifications for killing thousands of Americans on a lie. So I wonder if perhaps our reality is different now, and if Ms. Holtzman feels like perhaps we are living a banana republic, considering the way things are going and the way they're about to go.
Well, I share your concern about the failure of Congress in a serious way to examine the causes of the Iraq War and the lies in connection with the Iraq War and the failure to have accountability in connection with that. I think that that's unfortunate, but I don't give up hope that that'll never happen. But right now we're faced with another crisis of very grave proportions, in which what's at stake here, let's get to the bottom, and I thank you, by the way, for your very kind comments about me. But what's at stake here is whether a campaign in the United States colluded with a foreign power to win an election. And that's not so different in a way from what happened in Watergate. It wasn't collusion with a foreign power to win an election, although we now know that Nixon did collude with a foreign power over that. But
who was that? Which foreign power?
With South Vietnam.
Oh.
Yes, we know that Nixon's campaign reached it. Nixon and his instructions, the campaign reached out to the South Vietnamese government to tell them not to sign the Paris Peace Accords, because if the Paris Peace Accords had been signed, this was in October and November, right at the election time, that the American people might elect Hubert Humphrey. So, but put that aside and just focus on Watergate. I mean, I lost my
on today. You mean on today with Trump and collusion?
Yeah, right. So we have the issue is whether a president of the United States or his campaign colluded with a foreign power to win an election. That means that our democracy is really at risk. I mean, there are a lot of things that could go wrong internally and a lot of collusion or corruption that could happen internally, but to be colluding with a foreign power to do this raises other questions. And we have to know, even if times have changed, we can't give up on our democracy. That's really the issue. We have to try to find out whether that happened. I hope it didn't, but if it did happen, we need to know about it. We need to take steps to make sure it never happens again, and we need to hold the people who engage in it accountable. But we don't know the answer to that yet. We are far from it. Or maybe not as far. I don't just don't know the internals of the investigation.
So let's end on this question of collusion for today. Trump, in the clip we played from Sunday, continued to insist there is no collusion. He didn't say there's no obstruction of justice,
right,
like firing Comey, which there might be better evidence for. But no collusion is a pretty common line of argument by Trump and his people. Whatever else may have happened with anyone, and with all that is leaked so far, there is no evidence of any quid pro quo, like Trump or his campaign actually gave anything to the Russians or took anything from the Russians in exchange for considerations after the election. What needs to be found for the president to be in real, let's say, impeachable territory, and where do you see the evidence now with respect to collusion per se?
Okay, first of all, the president can be in impeachable territory for a lot of reasons. It doesn't have to be collusion, and depends on the kind of collusion or what. So there's no formula for that. It could be treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors. I mean, I think the failure, personally, I think we're in impeachable territory right now because the president has refused to take any steps to protect the election process next year in 2018 from interference by a foreign government. Maybe it won't be the Russians. Maybe it'll be the Chinese. Maybe it won't be the Chinese. It'll be Egypt or, I don't know, or North Korea. But we have to have an election process in the United States that can function in an honest and way. And the president is just wiped his hands of that. And I think that's an abdication of responsibility to take care that the laws are faithfully executed, which is failure to do that is an impeachable offense. But let's put that aside. The American people aren't there yet. But what will it take? I believe that if Trump fires Mueller, that could become serious ground for impeachment, and the public would see that. If Mueller uncovers serious evidence of the obstruction of justice here, it doesn't have to be collusion with the Russians. Mm-hmm. That would be sufficient.
But that's, let me relate those two, and then we're going to be out of time. But the obstruction of justice, if he's firing Mueller, if he fired Comey and took all these other actions that we know have been secretive with respect to contacts with the Russians, and his son and son-in-law did, and other people have not disclosed contacts with the Russians. It sure looks like they're trying 15 different ways to cover up contacts with the Russians. But what has not been revealed is what it is that they're covering up that would be so bad.
That's right. We don't know that. I mean, we don't have what we had during Watergate, which is John Dean saying that the burglars were paid off. We don't have that central criminal act, but we do have some things. We do know that the campaign was seriously considering dropping sanctions against Russia, and that may have been a quid pro quo. We do know that the campaign changed the platform to remove the attack on the issue of Ukraine, because that was something that would, what was in the platform was anti-Russian, and they wanted to take that out. So we see that there are at least two actions, one concrete action and one effort to try to remove sanctions. So we know that they were there was a quo waiting for a quid. We don't know what the quid was, and presumably we'll find that out or find that there was none.
To be continued. Elizabeth Holtzman, former Brooklyn DA, former member of Congress from Brooklyn, very active in the Watergate investigation back in the day. Thank you so much for lending your expertise to understanding what's going on right now.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.